on our agenda today, we have YF and productivity essay. But we want to, UIF is the first entity to talk to us. Please introduce the delegation that has come with you. And thank you for coming.
Good morning, Chairperson, and good morning to honorable members. I am with Mr. Khumalo. He is doing our strategic planning. I have Ms. Hilda Mhlongo, who is the head of corporate services. That includes strategic planning. I also have Ms. Lizanne Bredenham, who is responsible for financial reporting. Chairperson, my name is Boaz Tarowa. I'm the UIF commissioner. The presentation, Chairperson, I'll do the introduction. When it comes to strategic planning, Ms. Hilda Mhlongo will make a presentation. When it comes to financial matters, I'll hand over to Ms. Lizanne Bredenham. The context of our presentation is we'll start with the vision, mission, and the legislative mandate that governs the unemployment insurance fund. In a nutshell, we will do performance reports against the target for 2014-15, Chairperson, because the financial year is not yet over. It will be over by Monday. Then we will do the strategic planning for 5 years, the annual performance plan for the year 2015-2016, and we will also do the budget review for 2015-16. In terms of our mission, the Unemployment Insurance Fund strives to contribute to the alleviation of poverty in South Africa by providing short-term unemployment insurance to all workers who qualify for unemployment and related benefits. We say it's a short-term Chairperson because we pay up to the maximum of 8 months. With regard to our mission, the central purpose and role of the Unemployment Insurance Fund is defined as follows. We're rendering an effective, accessible service to all our stakeholders, which is both employers and employees, being a sustainable organization with sufficient reserves. We also strive to administer the fund professionally. I indicated in the past when I appeared here that all the three mission statements we were able to achieve as the fund. We are governed by the following Act, the Unemployment Insurance Act of 2001 and the Unemployment Insurance Contributions Act of the same year. In terms of the Unemployment Insurance Act, the Unemployment Insurance Fund was established in terms of the Unemployment Insurance Act of 2001 as amended. The Act empowers the UIF to register all employers and employees in South Africa, with a few exceptions. Also, in terms of the legislative mandate, Section 8 of the Act empowers the SARS Commissioner to collect monthly contributions from both employers and employees who are required to register as employers in terms of the first schedule of the Income Tax Act, and those are the people who are paying pay as you pay AYE, and those who are paying site are the money collected by the Unemployment Insurance Commissioner, as indicated in terms of Section 9. The contributions that we receive, Chairperson and honorable members, are utilized to pay benefits and any other expenditure reasonably incurred relating to the application of this Act. And what is left is invested through the Public Investment Corporation. The achievements that we have registered as the UIF, the first one, we contributed to job creation by investing 4 billion in with the public in, with the Industrial Development Corporation. And to date, we have created and saved 51 jobs in South Africa. Chairperson, in terms of our claim, we are proud to indicate that 90% of our valid claims with complete information, they are approved or rejected within 5 weeks of application, as reflected in the fund's operational system by December. We do have indicated here, Chair, that we have a challenge where we cannot be able to process application if we don't get information from employers, but we have decided to embark on an awareness campaign to encourage them to give us information so that we could process this claim as soon as possible. The claims that we reject, Chair, are those for where people have not been registered with the UIF and the contributions are not forthcoming. We introduced a new system that we called the U-Filing, where employees apply for UIF online. To date, 11,999 claims have been submitted online, which indicates, Chairperson, that these people did not come to our labor centers. They applied in the comfort of their homes and their offices. In 2013, the Minister of Labor launched 9 initiatives to alleviate the effects of unemployment. And we did indicate when we came here that the schemes that the Minister has launched there were there to indicate that up to date, 4,535 learners have been recruited and they are in training. Out of this number, 3,000 have completed their training. And the training in this area, Chairperson, entails the artisans, entails also ICT skills. And most of these people are absorbed by employers. And the Minister decided that the majority of those who complete the ICT skills will be absorbed within the Department of Labor. So we have some of these students working in the Department of Labor to get experiential training. I'll hand over to Ms. Mshongo to take us through the strategic planning.
Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members, and colleagues from the Department of Labor and colleagues from Productivity SA. I will be taking you through the UIF strategic plan, our 5-year plan, which constitute 4 key strategic objectives. The first key strategic objective is to improve financial management. The second one is to improve service delivery. The third one is to improve compliance to the UIF Act. And lastly, the fund to fund poverty alleviation schemes. These key objectives are linked to the service delivery outcomes. They are linked to the National Development Plan. And particularly for the UIF, we are focusing on outcome number 4, which is decent employment through inclusive economic growth. We also focus on outcome number 12, which is an efficient, effective, and development-orientated public service and an empowered and inclusive citizenship. We also focus on outcome number 13, which talks to an inclusive and responsible social protection system. In terms of Program 1, for the next 5 years, our key strategic objective, as indicated, is to provide management, strategic and administrative support to the fund. For the year, output number 1 there is sound financial management. In terms of indicators that we are going to focus on for the next 5 years, for 2015-16, we want to increase our returns on investment by 8%. For 2016-17, we want to increase our investment returns by 9%. The same for 2017-18. And for 2018-19, we are increasing. We're saying we want to increase our investment returns by 10%, and also in the outer year for 2019-20, increase investment returns by 10%. We are also focusing on capping administrative expenditure, and we are saying for 2015-16, we want to ensure that our administrative expenditure is kept at 15% or less, and this applies to the five-year period. In terms of social responsible investment, which I will refer to as SRI, for 2015-16, in fact, for the next 5 years, our target is to ensure that we commit funds 80% to the SRI. In terms of the next output or strategic objective to improve service delivery, as a fund, we are saying we want to improve client services as we serve our beneficiaries. Our key performance indicator there is to ensure that 90% of valid claims are processed within 5 weeks of application. This will also apply for 2016-17, 2017-18, and for 2018 and 19, we want to increase that to 95%. In order for us also to meet our mandate, we want to improve service delivery, and therefore we had to look at technology and systems that we are using. As the Commissioner has indicated, we have introduced a new filing system for claims to be submitted through. In terms of the new filing, we are saying for 2015-16, we want claims, 15,000 claims to be submitted through new filing. In 2016-17, we want 20,000 claims to be submitted through the system. In 2017-18, 30,000, 2018-19, 40,000, and in 2019-20, 40,000 claims. What we are trying to say here, we want to ensure that the uptake for using the system increases over the year. Also, we have acts that need to be complied to, and to improve compliance, we also want to increase the percentage of new employers registering on our system. And for 2015-16, we would like to increase that by 4%. 2016-17, we want a 6% increase of new employers registering with us. 2017-18, we're looking at 8% up until 2020. We also want to increase our revenue, and for the next 5 years, we want to increase our revenue by 6%. Our third strategic objective, which also still talks to improving compliance to the UIF Act, we want to ensure that we collect overpayments that would have been paid to our beneficiaries. In 2015-16, our target is to collect 20% of outstanding overpayments. In 2016-17, we're stretching the goal to 30%. In 2017-18, we want to collect 30% of outstanding overpayments. In 2018-19, 35%, and in 2019-20, 35%. We also want to increase the uptake of the new filing system. In 2015-16, we would like employers to use the system to declare and pay contributions, and therefore we are targeting 20% of employers who are registered with us to utilize the system. In 2016-17, we're looking at 30%, and up until 2019-2020, we'd like to increase the uptake by the employers to 30%. The fourth strategic objective is fund poverty alleviation schemes. We've got a number of initiatives there, and the first one is to develop entrepreneurs, and the target for 2015-16 is to develop 600 aspiring entrepreneurs, and throughout the 5 years we do have the same target to develop 600 aspiring entrepreneurs per year. Also, we want to train beneficiaries who are UI beneficiaries. For 2015-16, we'd like to train 6,000 beneficiaries. 2016-17, 7,000. 2017-18, 8,000 beneficiaries. And 2018-19 and 2019-2020. Would like to train 9,000 UI beneficiaries. In terms of the social plan, we'd like to fund this initiative, and we are saying in 2015-16, we want to assist 100 companies that are distressed, and this is done through the partnership with Productivity SA. So for the coming 5 years, for each year, we will be assisting 100 companies per year. In terms of the labor activation program, we want to establish a labor activation fund, and for 2015-16, we would like the fund to be established as at March 2016. Also, a key performance indicator in terms of alleviating poverty through labor activation program. We want in 2015-16, we want to implement all the initiatives that we have highlighted, and that will continue in 2016-17. We also want to build strategic alliances with educational institutions, and for 2015-16, we'd like to sign memorandums of understanding or service level agreements with 20 educational institutions, and in 2016-17, we want to increase that to 50. We want to sign 50 service level agreements with educational institutions. If I take you through the breakdown of our annual performance plan for the financial year 2015-16, which starts on the 1st of April 2015, in terms of client service for quarter one, for the four quarters, we want to ensure that we process 90% of the valid claims within 5 weeks of submission. In terms of improving service delivery, the number of claims submitted through your filing claims portal, for the first quarter, we want the uptake of the system, 15,000 claims to be submitted through the e-filing system. In the second, the first quarter will be 3,750. Second quarter, 7,500. Third quarter, 11,250. And in the last quarter, we want to achieve 15,000 claims submitted through the e-filing system. In terms of a percentage of valid claims completed with valid information, I think it's the same. Repeating, sorry. The next page is the improved compliance. Our annual target for 2015-16 is to increase 4% increase in the number of new employer registrations by March 2016. We've broken that into quarters. We're saying for the first quarter, we want a 1% increase. Second quarter, 2% increase. Third quarter, 3% increase, and fourth quarter, 4% increase in the number of new employers registering with the UIF. We also want to increase our revenue. In the first quarter, we're seeing 1.5% increased revenue as compared to the previous financial year by June 2015, 3% increase in the revenue as compared to the previous year by the end of September 2015, 4.5% increase in revenue by December 2015, and 6% increase by the end of the financial year. In terms of overpayment, we have a target for the financial year to collect 20% of outstanding overpayments. We've broken that down into quarters. In the first quarter, we will endeavor to collect 5% of outstanding payments. In the second quarter, 10%. The third quarter, 15%. And at the end of the financial year, we should reach the target of 20% collection of outstanding overpayments. As I have indicated, we want to increase the uptake of the U-filing system. For the first quarter, we're looking at increasing employers utilizing the system by 5%, second quarter 10%, the third quarter 15%, and the fourth quarter 20% increase in employers utilizing you filing to declare and to pay contribution. In terms of funding poverty alleviation schemes, these targets are annual targets. Therefore, we have not broken them down into quarters, although we will be reporting in terms of progress as we come and report to the portfolio committee. However, as indicated for the financial year 2015-16, we'd like to develop aspiring entrepreneurs, and the target is 600. We also want to train UIF beneficiaries, and our target for the year is 6,000. We want to assist companies that are in distress to avoid unemployment where possible, and we are targeting 100 distressed companies. And we also would like to establish a labor activation fund by March 2016. We also would like to implement our labor activation program strategy by March 2016. This is also an annual target. And also, we also want to ensure that by the end of the financial year, we have signed 20 service level agreements with educational institutions. Thank you, Chairperson. I'll hand over to Ms. Brian Hunt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. When we look at the UIF's budget overview for the financial year 2015-16, the amounts disclosed are as per the approved revised budget that was approved by the Minister of Labour last year in August. If we have a look at our administrative costs, the revised budget for 2014-15 was 1.9 billion rand, and the budget forecast for 2015-16 in terms of the funds expenditure is 2.019 billion, broken down as follows. In terms of goods and services, 838 million, employee costs, 998 million, and then in terms of capital expenditure, 182 million rand. For the information of the members, the 182 million rand is the UIF is currently in the process of implementing an ERP financial system. So that amount includes an amount for the software and the hardware. And in addition to that, the UIF is currently doing major renovations to the head office building in Pretoria. Then if we have a look at our revenue, the funds contribution revenue is based on a revenue model that is developed by the funds actuaries, which is further based on CPI and GDP. This is the budget before the budget announcement by the Minister of Finance. We will get to that slide at the later stage. Then in terms of other income for the financial year 2015-16, we have budgeted 275 million rand. This is mostly on interest and penalties received from our debtors, our contributor debtors, and then also bank interest. Then if we have a look at our investment revenue, the budget for 2015-16 has been 10.03 billion rand. This amount includes in interest from investments, dividends, and discounts received. Then if we have a look at the UIF benefits, the UIF benefit expenditure is also based on an actuarial report, which is done on an annual basis, round about at the end of March, April. I take into account the economic conditions, the workforce, the CPI and GDP, and then based on historical trends and forecasts, they then do their forecasts for the UIF with regards to benefits expenditure. If we go to the next slide, the benefit expenditure of 7.9 billion rand is broken into the different benefit types. If you look at 2015-16, unemployment benefits is budgeted for 6.1 billion rand, illness benefits at 330 million rand, maternity benefits at 1.0 billion rand, adoption benefits at 1.0 million rand, and then dependent benefits at 418 million rand. Then if we go to the next slide, the fund's actuarial report also gives an indication as to how much money the UIF needs to put aside to make provision for people who has contributed but who has not claimed yet, and in addition to that, people who are in the process of claiming. That is what the technical reserves constitute of. If we have a look at our approved revised budget of 2014-15, the actuarial indicated that we should reserve, in addition to what we already have on reserve, 2.015 billion rand, and then the forecast for 2015-16 is 2.06 billion rand. Then, Madam Chair, if we go down to the labour activation programs, as Ms. Mkhongo has indicated, the training rail schemes and the social plan funding, which specifically refers to our productivity SI colleagues. The approved revised budget for 2014-15 was 550 million rand, and this has subsequently been increased to 695 million rand, of which the training of the unemployed constitutes 189.5 million rand, and the unemployment alleviation schemes 505 million rand. Then, Madam Chair, if we go to the next slide, which is the last slide, this slide gives members an indication of the, it's a high overview of the effect and the impact that the Minister of Finance budget speech had in terms of the implementation thereof from the 1st of April. If we have a look at our contributions, which is currently budgeted for according to the, as I've indicated, the actuarial reserve revenue model, the fund has budgeted 17.7 billion rand. This is basically based on the fact that contributions is currently capped at 14,872. According to the Minister's budget speech, that it indicated that all contributions will be capped at 1,000 rand, which means that you'll receive 10 rand from the employer and 10 rand from the employee. So the revised budget will then decrease from 17.7 billion to 1.1 billion rand. All the other amounts has been retained except for benefit payments, because members will also recall that the UIF is currently in the process of improving the, well, we submitted the amendments to the UI bill to improve benefit payments. So in terms of the first column, this is prior to the UI bill benefit improvements. So So the benefit payment in the revised budget is still 7.9 billion rand. We have decreased the labor activation programs with 496 million rand to 198 million rand. And then as you can see, due to the fact that the contributions or the contribution ceiling has been decreased to 1,000 rand, the URF will make a deficit of 5.5 billion rand in comparison to the original budget that was submitted and approved last year, 17.3 billion rand. Then if we take into account employee costs and administrative expenditure, which has also been which is also the same as the approved revised budget, the UIF will then have a net deficit of 7.5 billion rand after the implementation of the announcement of the Minister of Finance. The second column, Madam Chair, is with regards to the UI bill. If the UI bill is implemented, the figures are all the same. The contributions are still 1.1 billion rand. If we go down to benefit payments, you will see that our benefit payments has increased from 7.9 billion to 8.6 billion due to the benefit improvements. Then the UIF will have an operating deficit of 7.6 billion rand in comparison to the 15.2 billion rand surplus that was originally budgeted for. And then after employee costs and administrative expenditure, we will then sit with a deficit of 9.6 billion rand in comparison to the original budget of 13.18 billion rand. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mr. President, I just need to indicate that in our strategic plan, members will realize that issues around corporate services have not been included. However, we're dealing with them in our work plan. Issues that are not there is human resource management, communication, risk management, and internal audit. Lastly, Chair, on the financial information, I just need to indicate that despite the fact that UIF will make a deficit based on what has been announced, we still have adequate assets to be able to carry our business in the next financial year. So we currently have 112 billion that is invested. So it doesn't mean that if we have a deficit of 9.6, we need to go and borrow. We can still conduct our business. Thank you.
Thank you, UIF. I think the presentation is very clear, and I think the details that we need, but I'm sure there are some questions that members want to pose. Members, Honorable Bakri.
Thanks. Thank you, Madam Chair. I thank the presenters for this, and well done. Things are improving a lot, and we're excited about that. I just have a couple of comments to make. One of them is I hear from many of the domestic workers here, especially in Cape Town, is that, first of all, they don't get registered, and then if they complain, no one goes to check up on the madam, as it were. There doesn't seem to be any follow-up at all. The second thing is that they never get any indication of that the employer has been paying, and nor does the employer. When I follow up and ask the employer if they've been paying, they never get any report backs from UIF at all. There seems to be just deafening silence on that. So that's the first thing. And that, of course, leads to the second thing is enforcement. And I know that there are thousands and thousands of households, but domestic workers are the most downtrodden in the economy, and somehow we don't have inspectors going out and enforcing, or at least letters to people or something to warn employers. And every household, if you look at most households, they have a domestic worker, and somehow it would be easy just to send someone to walk from household to household just to say we need to do it. It's all very well to have fancy laws and fantastic compliance, et cetera, et cetera, but no one actually checks up on the employers. And I think it's led to a lot of heartache, because it doesn't help after 20 years of employment, it doesn't help to say, oh, well, your employer never registered you, so, oh, geez, and that's the message they're getting from your officers. Sorry about that. There's nothing we can do. That's just never registered. The non-payment of UIF, some people start paying UIF and then just stop. And that should be easy to follow up. Employers are very happy to think, oh, well, we haven't paid for the last 6 months. No one's ever complained, so we'll just never do it again. And we're finding that more often than not. I know because many of the employers find us afterwards and say, well, no one ever followed up, and we just left it and thought it was not a problem. Which leads me on to the next issue. If an employer does deduct the UIF, which often they do, and then don't pay it over, that's criminal. And there should be criminal compliance. There should be criminal action taken against those employers who deduct and then don't do anything about it. And I think that's right. And especially when the economy gets tougher, that's absolutely right. And the easiest way to check this is to go through all the liquidations and to see. And you'll see every single liquidation that you have, that they are mostly, they haven't paid over, obviously, PAYE, UIF, workman's compensation, etc. And somehow there's no follow-up on this. Even at the liquidation, no one criminally charges the directors who are personally responsible. You can't just say, oh, the company's liquidated. And in fact, that's what happened. When people phone your offices, they say, oh, well, the company's liquidated. Sorry, there's nothing we can do. Cheers. And they put the phone down. But in fact, you can pursue the individuals. And we need one or two solid, absolutely solid criminal prosecutions to wake up the directors out there, because people are feeling that they've got immunity, which is pretty sad. Just finally, in terms of the UIF, there are still complaints, and I had mentioned this last time, there's still complaints with foreigners saying that we are here legally, we are here with work permits, they do deduct the UIF, but when we have to go and claim, they say, sorry, you're a foreigner, there's nothing you can do about it. Cheers. And your officers are still saying that. Apparently that is being you're trying to tackle that now, but it's still out there. And then finally, obviously, thank you for putting domestic workers on the UIF and to concentrating on them, because they are the downtrodden. So thank you very much, Madam Chair. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, ma'am and gentlemen. In terms of, just trying to carry on with my colleague as left off, is that although largely we experience good service from the labor centers and regional offices, but we do get quite a number of complaints from frustrated applicants who try to access the benefits. So there seems to be, at some officials they do not communicate effectively to the applicants. And after experiencing it myself, there's a general reluctance maybe I'd just phrase it differently. One really struggle to get into touch with your labor centers, and I'm here speaking specifically about those in the Western Cape, where I personally tried to, on numerous occasions, to make contact with the regional office or any labor center in the Western Cape. People simply just don't answer the telephones. And it's kind of frustration that many of the applicants are experiencing, and I have simply just no way that people who are desperate for the money, who have been on maternity leave for 3 months and without any income, it's a real problem. Coming back to the strategic plan and the plan for the year and the budget, I have just a few questions that I would like to raise and concerns. It's envisaged that for the next financial year that we will have an uptake of about 15,000 U-File users accessing the benefits through U-Filing. I'd like to know what is the current number of people making use of the service, and to what extent, what strategies are in place to create greater awareness amongst potential beneficiaries as to how they could possibly access the service via U-Filing. And furthermore, on page 33, and that is program number 3, labor activation programs. There is a link between the revised budget that has been stated, and I'd like to know how it is going to impact the revision of the labor activation allocation from 695 million rand to 198 million. Where are we going to reduce the allocation? Because with that sort of decrease, we will never be able to reach the target that we have set out for ourselves for the 2015-2016 financial year. So I'd like to have a bit of clarity regarding that one. It's also stated that we will have a number of service level agreements with educational institutions. What kind of educational institutions are envisaged? Is it FETs, universities? And what kind of service level agreements are we talking about here? Yeah, for now, Madam Chair, I would pause. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Good morning, everyone. My questions are more clarity-seeking questions. How does an overpayment come? And how do UIF assist distressed companies? How do you reach them and all that? And also the point of assisting the creation of the new entrepreneurs. We want to get more clarity on that. And on the point of training of the layoff schemes, how do you assist? The last one would be unemployment alleviation schemes. I just want to get more information about it. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I also want to join the rest of the previous speakers in appreciating the report, and I've been mostly covered by the previous speakers. However, if we look at the investment portfolio fund of 108.5 billion rand, and it's set to increase according to them. I would like them to unpack this portfolio investment fund. And are you just growing? I want to know if you're just growing the fund, or are you using the interest and the profits that you're making for operational purposes as well? Then we are seeing that there's the number of staff to increase by 163 between 2014-15 and 2015-16 financial year. So my interest is, what is the current vacancy rate within the entity, so that we can just be clear on the increase of the staff. With regards to the training layoff schemes and social plan funding, what kind of training does they provide? And I'm specifically interested on the kind of training and how it affects the unemployed. So are you just providing training for the sake of providing training, or do you have records or data available that shows actually that what the impact is on the unemployed with regards to this training, if after this training the unemployed is really employable, and to what extent has it happened within the past, recent past? So yeah, the rest I'm covered here. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. And thanks for the presentation. I always find the UIF presentation very helpful. I'd like to just ask a couple of questions. On page 4, you talk about these learners, and I just would like some more information, Mr. Surui. Are these learners drawing money as a result of the employee tax incentive, or are they drawing money in terms of the skills development levy and the CETAs, or is this a different program that you're running internally in the UIF department, or is this in the labor department generally? Perhaps you could just give us a little bit of information. There's 4,535 learners that have been recruited. Are they working in private companies, or are they working in the UIF fund, or are they working in the Department of Labor? Where are these learners learning? And then just some information about that program. It sounds like a very good program, but I don't know exactly where it fits in terms of the payments and the laws and the programs that are running in the country at the moment. Page 7, I'm a little bit disturbed about this slide about collecting outstanding overpayments. You've got targets of collecting 20% in 2015, 2016, 30%, 35% as the years go on. Why are we having so much overpayment? Can you give us an estimate of the rand value of how much is being overpaid, for example, in the current financial year, so that we can get an idea of what numbers we're talking about? Because, and also why the overpayments occur. Is it staff errors? They pay the wrong amount to the employee? Is it that employees have been falsely, or unemployed people have been falsely declaring their status? Why have we got lots of overpayments, and how much is it? How bad is it? Is it 5 rand, 5 million rand, 500 million? I don't know what sort of scale it is. Sorry, just flip over a lot of pages to page 14 of the presentation. You said you've got 112 billion in assets invested. I just want to know, is that sort of cash and cash equivalents, such as investments in banks, or is it, you know, what percentage of this is money that's not immediately available or readily available? In other words, you've lent it to the IDC or somebody to invest in long-term projects. Is this 112 billion readily available? And I'm assuming this, just to clarity too, you've got these two columns on page 14, prior to the UI bill and post the UI bill, and then you've got the original budget and revised budget. Can I just clarify, the revised budget is taking into account the Minister of Finance's announcement about the reduction in payments. So that's what it means, the revised budget. And then the post-UI bill is a new bill that's coming to Parliament that's going to change the financial calculation altogether. Because I'm quite happy with the Finance Minister's announcement, because I think that's DA policy. We asked that be done, and it's been done, and so we congratulate the Department on doing the right thing and the Minister of Finance on doing the right thing. But the UI bill worries me a little bit more, because that's long-term. And if you're long-term going to be making a deficit every year, that would be a bit worrying. Short-term, we want you to make a deficit because you've got all that money invested, and so we don't want to waste the workers' money. We want workers to keep their money and not have it sit in funds somewhere. So that's the right thing to do. I'm just worried about this bill, the long-term effects of this bill. And then finally, Chairperson, I agree with my colleague. The three areas where we get the complaints are with regarding to foreigners who work in the country, pay the UIF, and then they find it very difficult to claim if they are unemployed. So that's the one. The second one is domestic workers. I'm very glad that you have the domestic workers program, but I also want to push the question of education and enforcement. Please could we have a program of educating employers about their responsibilities for domestic workers, UIF. I don't think they all understand properly what they're supposed to do. And as my colleague says, if they don't hear from the fund for 3 years, eventually they lapse. They just stop paying. And then when the domestic worker comes to claim, they get told, no, there's no money. They can't claim because the employer didn't pay the money. And, you know, this is a large number of people. So to do it on a one-on-one basis might be difficult, but can you investigate and give us a report back on an education campaign that you can run? Because I really would like to have a pamphlet in my briefcase that I can go to employers and say, you know what, ma'am, you have not paid this. You are in the wrong. Here's the document. Here's the education. You know, like a radio campaign pamphlets or something. We need to drive this to tell employers and employees what domestic workers must receive and what payments must be made, because I think that it's gone quiet and people are not getting the payments they deserve. And finally, if you could just educate me about the maternity side of things. I know that there's unemployment paid for certain maternity benefits, and we get queries about that, and I'm not sure that all of us, and me particularly as a committee member, fully understand how that works. And then when I get a constituency member complaining, I don't know what to tell them, because I don't quite understand the full way that works. Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm done.
Honorable Montas. Thank you, Chair. I've been partly covered by other members of the committee, but I just want clarity. In which sectors have the jobs been saved, as tabulated on page 4? And how is it going to happen that you are going to cap administrative expenses? What are you going to do to change the situation? And again, what are the incentives that are in place to encourage employers to register in the IF? And who's going to enforce compliance? I'm too much interested in the entity telling us how do we arrange for the training of the vast numbers of unemployed youth to be entrepreneurs. We so wish we could get it into our constituencies if they can explain to us. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you, members. UIF?
So, person, I will answer questions and colleagues will feel where I did not answer. I think the first question about domestic workers, it's a valid comment. We just introduced a registration of domestic workers and employers. And the compliance is not that good. However, I just need to indicate, Chair, that we have about 800,000 domestic employers on our database, the Minister of Labour, looking at the issue of non-compliance, has actually done domestic workers in visas for all provinces, and this year also she has continued to do that. What happens in this Mbizo, Chairperson, is that we go to rich communities with our mobile labor centers, we come with the laptops, and the minister and the senior management of the department and our stakeholders, they then communicate with domestic workers to educate them about the UIF and how it operates. And those who prompt with complaints, they will then go to our buses, mobile buses, where they are assisted. Over and above that, we as officials, we also have campaigns, we call them seminars, where we move from one place to another. Just last month we had BRETS, where we engage with workers and employers to make them aware of our legislation. But we also have inspectors from the Department of Labor who go and do some enforcement mechanisms to ensure that the domestic employers to comply. But what we also did to make work easier for domestic employers is the e-filing system, because most of them, they find it cumbersome to go and pay 20 rand at the bank. So we gave them a system where they can make a declaration and also or make a payment. However, we will continue to make our enforcement mechanisms to be more extensive and maybe to reach as many communities as possible. One thing that is good about the UIF chairperson is that their responsibility to pay the UIF rests with the employer. So it's the employer who must pay. Now, when an employee comes from a domestic employer and claim, and we realize that they are actually registered, we actually do not stop paying them. We actually pay them, but we go and recover the money from the domestic employer through our mechanism. So the only people that we should not pay are those who are not registered at all, where we don't have any history. Because once we can do that, then we will be having a situation where those who are paying and are registering are subsidizing those who are not. And if we do that, then we are going to have a culture of non-payment, because people won't find any reason to register and pay their employees. We do have cases where employers take receive the UIF from employees, but they don't pay it over to the UI. So we are lucky as an organization, because if that is the case, and through our enforcement mechanisms, we don't reach these people. But when an employee comes and say, I want to claim I've been paying, that is the time when we catch that particular employer, and we go in there, and we will get the money. In our financial information presentation, one of the things that we did not include there is penalties and interest. Employers who do not pay us, we charge them penalties, and we also charge them interest. And from time to time, you're correct that if an employer does not pay, you'll see that there's no contribution. We have a database, and each time we receive money, you need to reconcile the money that you receive. Now, those who have not paid, we have a section that we call revenue collection, which will do the collection. Companies who get into liquidation, and we experience a lot of them, and I need to indicate that those, if they are registered with the UI and the employees are registered, we pay them because they become unemployed. So they come to us, the company has closed down, and there are retrenchments. We have a responsibility to pay, and from time to time we pay. The only exception will be where there is no registration. And in that case, Chairperson, we will actually work with the inspectors to follow up on those companies. We, in terms of foreigners, and we as the UIF, we have actually issued an amendment to our legislation where we said foreigners should now benefit from the UI, because you're correct, there was under Unemployment Insurance Contributions Act, all employees must register and pay. But our act, which is Unemployment Insurance Act, from was precluding them from getting benefit. So we decided to synchronize the legislation, and we are paying them. The biggest challenge that we face, Chairperson, with this in this area, is the identification. For South Africans, it's easy because they come with an ID. But when it's foreigners, unfortunately, we use the permits that they have, but some of them do not have those permits, and we find a challenge in terms of assisting them. But from time to time, we will see how we can try to assist more and more on them. But as an organization, we also don't want to be irresponsible and pay people who come with documents which are not recognized, or which are by employers or also Home Affairs and the Department of Labor. Chairperson, there are other questions from Mr. America where he talked about the issue of communication. It's unfortunate that in some offices the employees are not acting in a responsible manner, but I wish to indicate to you that we have performance management systems within the Department of Labor where people who are underperforming, we have to deal with them through progressive discipline mechanism. However, we want to move to a point. We had a meeting with our officials to operate the person in a manner that a person does not leave a labor center without help. We're starting to put the telephone numbers of the regional managers, just like the banks, there, so that if a person is not happy, they can phone the regional manager, and the regional manager can assist without having a situation where employees find themselves in a difficult situation. So we're trying to deal with that particular issue in that manner. But the next financial year, we have embarked on a training. We call it a customer care training, where we are going to train our frontline staff on how to treat our employees, our clients who are employees and employers, and to actually try to assist them as much as possible. We hope that through this intervention, we will have a less a complaint in those areas. The current number of the people who are utilizing the U-filing, it is utilized in two ways. You can use it to claim benefits, and you can also use it, but employers and employees can use it. In terms of employees, we went on a campaign on TV where we educated and we advertised this service. We saw the numbers increasing from 1,000 to 2,000 a month, but that is still a drop in an ocean. When you take into account that the people who come to our offices, they are 60,000. That's why in our strategic plan, we want to increase that number. Also, in terms of the employers who are making the declaration and payment, I think Lizanne will give us the exact figure in that area. In terms of labor activation, In terms of the UIX, our core business is to pay benefits. And over and above the payment of benefits, the Minister of Labor is empowered to intervene in a positive manner where he can alleviate the effect of unemployment through training, through social responsible investment, and also through a training layoff scheme and other turnaround solutions. And when we don't have the adequate income that is coming into the fund, We need to look into those areas which are not core, and those areas will be the areas of the training of the unemployed, the training layoff schemes, and also the turnaround, the issue of the companies in distress, which means our investments, we need now to demand maximum return instead of looking at minimum return and higher return on social investment, which is other areas. Unfortunately, those are the areas where if we are pushed into a corner, we have to look at, because we cannot pay less benefits. And the agreements that we have are they with the CETAs? They are also with the TVET, that is your FET colleges, because that's where you get technical skills. And I just need to indicate that in the next financial year, we are going to train people on technical skills, which are in the main coming from the TVET colleges, because government has invested a lot of money in terms of infrastructure in those areas. The Honorable Mutaga, the issue of overpayment is something that also gives us sleepless nights, but how it works is that we depend on an employee who becomes unemployed. We'll continue to pay until that employee is back to work. Unfortunately, some employees do not tell us that they are back at work, because every month they produce a form that is called UI 2.8. which is a declaration form. Now, some of them don't do that, but unfortunately, because we work with employers in terms of information, you find that instead of the information coming from the employee, being honest, the information comes from the employer, but comes after 3 months while we are paying them, what we have paid the money. So we need them to recover that 3 months from that employee. That is how it works. In terms of the assistance of companies in distress, we assist them through first the training layoff scheme, Chairperson, which is a scheme which was launched by the President during economic meltdown, and that scheme still exists today. What happens is that if a company finds itself in financial difficulties, maybe it has lost a contract or it's the other issues that it deals with, they then will approach us, and what we will do then, we will subsidize the salary of employees for a period of 6 months while we give that employer a breathing space. And we have successful areas, like I think the BMW, companies like BMW did come to us for assistance. So instead of retaining workers, they come to us to have that breathing space, and we find them recovering after that particular period. In terms of the entrepreneurs, we take into account that, because there are two interventions that you do. You intervene when companies, you become proactive when companies are still operating, but when a worker is already retrenched, you train them and give them skills which are scarce and critical to enable them to go back to work. But you also take into account that there's a huge unemployment in the country. So we give people skills so that they can be able to create their own company. So we train them in terms of how to do their business plan, and we train them on how to do their financial statements, but we also refer them to the entities where we invest money with, like your IGC and your PIC. But in some cases, we also show them that there are also opportunities that we can access through our financial services system. The question about how long we will survive, Chairperson, is quite a very good question. We actually scared ourselves, because when the announcement came, we went to communicate with Treasury. We actually indicated to them that the 15 billion that they take from us is quite a huge amount of money. But we got an indication an assurance that this process is only for a year. So it's only for 1 year, and after that year, we will continue to be in to have our surpluses. Chairperson, in terms of the question that comes from Honorable Member Van Schalkwyk, the interest that we receive is coming from the bonds that we have invested in. It's coming from the bonds. It's coming from also equities, which is your dividend. But this money, of course, we use it for administrative expenditure, but to a very large extent, we want to give money more to workers. Hence, the Minister of Labour is trying to improve the benefits. And we if you look at our plan there, we were moving towards a situation where we are going to receive more income from our investment, and that income was going to be utilized to pay our benefits. And over and after doing that, we still have a deficit. We will have a surplus, which is a positive. And that is how we actually the issue. The other issue I need to mention is that if we grow the fund, the aim of the Department of Labor and the Minister is, as if you get more money, then we can try to do more on job creation, on training layoff scheme, and also on improving the benefits. Because as we speak now, the benefits, that the quality of our benefits are not compliant to the ILO convention 102, because in terms of that convention, the minimum should be 40. So we're starting with from a minimum of 38 up to a maximum of 68. So the current vacancy rate is around 10%. We had a new structure. Our aim was 5%, but why we have 10% is because we had a new structure, and the process of building new structure took some time. The kind of training that we offer is, we offer the training on the artisan side. We're offering training that can make people to be an artisan, like your area of to be electricians, fitters and tenors, welders. You know, we look at that training that will enable people to get work. And I need to indicate that most of the people who qualify with the skills, both in your manufacturing side and also in your mining side, those people find their employment in Transnet, for instance, and also others are employed into the mines, because those are the skills that we focus on. The other skills on ICT, we're looking at end user, because when you look for a person on the artisans, you need a person with math and science and machine. But we find that most people do not have that. So we decided to say, let us give people end-user training, which does not need matric on IT, to prepare them to get employment or to get a foothold into the ICT industry. But we also have, by embarking on the 6 months courses on plastering, building, and things like that, so to ensure that as many people as possible can have those skills. And Mr. Ollis, the skills that we embark on this venture are those that I've experienced. But we work in partnership with the CITES. So the money will come from the CITES in terms of skills development levy, and the other money is going to come from our UIF. So the training part will be paid in terms of skills development levy, and the issue of stipends will then come from the UI, so that we can reach as many people as possible. The collection of overpayment, it is a challenge, but what we do is that if a person is overpaid, like I've indicated when I asked Honorable Moteza, is that if you overpaid you by 3 months, you still have benefits. Now you will come to claim after maybe 2 years, so we are going to deduct to sell it off the amount of money that you have been overpaid with. So how we do the collection is through the set off when you still have benefits, but also through our normal collection processes. The exact figure, I think our director of reporting will then indicate the exact figure of overpayments, but what we are trying, what we need to strive to do is to prevent this overpayment. And unfortunately, we cannot prevent them if employers don't give us information on time or employees are not honest. But what we, through our outreach program, we're actually indicating that actually to get money while you are employed by the UIF, by your employer, it is a criminal offense. The 112 billion is only 10% is available in the money market, which is in cash, and that is according to our investment mandate. I need to indicate that 40% of the money is in government bonds, which means the UIF is actually playing an important role in the infrastructure. You know, when government issues bonds, we actually subscribe to those bonds. But the other percentage is actually sitting with the parastatals like Eskom, Transnet, and that we consider as our social responsible investment. But also the banks also have the money in terms of bonds, of long-term bonds, and other money is lying in the stock exchange. And the extent of what is in the stock exchange in terms of listed equities is around 20 billion. So the majority of the UIF money chairperson is invested in social responsible projects or projects which are helping government to deal with issues of infrastructure and also job creation. The long-term effect of the bills is that we are going to have an increase in payment because the bill intends to increase the period of claim from 8 to 12 months and also wants to increase the rate of paying maternity benefits from the minimum of 38 to a flat rate of 67% of the salary. So that is the long-term effect. So that expenditure will be recurring, but as I've indicated, the resources are available to deal with this particular matter. The program on domestic workers, we will actually share with you. That is, will be the program of the Minister of Labour and also the program of the officials. Now, in terms of maternity benefits, how it works is that we pay people over a period of 4 months instead of 8 months. When a person is about to go on maternity, they need to do a claim, but the doctors must confirm that a person is actually going on maternity. So the replacement rate depends on the salary, and it's between 38 and 60%. But as I've indicated, it will actually go higher. I just need to indicate here that some of the challenges with maternity benefits that members have raised is that most people apply for maternity benefits going through agencies, not directly. So there's a third party. They take the application to a third party, and third party brings them to the UN. So the delay could be on the third party. So that is the challenge with the issue of the maternity benefits. Honorable Mantashe, the jobs are created in all sectors. Your agro processing, your wood, your textile, your mining. But I just need to indicate that the sectors that we observe to be creating jobs are in the textile industry. The textile industry creates more work, more jobs. The wood industry creates more work, and we see less job creation in compared to the investment in the mining sector, and also agro processing also does create some work. So we going into the next financial year, more money will be channeled into those sectors. But just to add that in terms of provinces, we see the Western Cape, the KZN, and Gauteng as the beneficiaries of the schemes, and we do see some investments taking place in the Eastern Cape and all other areas. But we have, that is the observation that we've made. That's why some of the money has been ring-fenced to specifically target the rural areas which are not benefiting. So we took a conscious decision that we're not going to open it to everybody. So the housing, Western Cape and KZN, we will see in the next financial year the decreased investment in those areas because we want everybody to benefit. But however, I just need to indicate that the money throughout the country is benefiting, but more people who are benefiting are from those areas. I'll give to my colleagues to add where I left. I did not answer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In terms of the labor activation program, which has been decreased from 695 million to 298 million rand, we had a look at the past and the history, historical payments that we have made. The Minister of Labor has committed 1.2 billion rand for this project going forward. So in terms of the 1.2 billion rand that she has committed, the money that is, or the budget that is not utilized, the fund then takes and we budget in the other years. So in this area, there was room to deduct the budget. This is just a high-level estimation because this is not a revised budget that has been approved by the Ministry. This was a scenario indication in terms of what the effect will be if the if the contribution ceiling was come down to 1,000. Then in terms of Mr. Oles' question, and to add to what Mr. Sirui has said, in terms of the
go to that question. Which program? You've just said that the money that is not utilized is kept. What can you just repeat that for me? The unutilized funds, what happens?
Okay.
Maybe you can then say which programs that you're referring to.
Okay. The programs that I'm referring to, Madam Chair, is the labor activation programs. That is the training layoff scheme and the social plan funding, and also the training of the unemployed. The Minister of Labour committed 1.2 billion rand, Mr. Sirui, I think, for 3 years ago. So we have kept the commitment. So the budget that is not utilised, we take and we budget for in the outer years, so that we stick to what the Minister has committed to amount to 1.2 billion rand. So based on the actual expenditure that we have incurred in the past in terms of service level agreements that we've entered into, we have deducted provisionally just as an estimate based on actual expenditure, the labour activation programs in terms of the training layoff schemes, the social plan funding, and also the training of the unemployed. So we are keeping the Minister's commitment. However, in terms of budgeting for the outer years, we will cut the budget in this area to assist the fund and then utilize or just stretch it out in the outer years going from 17, 18, 18, 19, and 19, 20.
It's not a question, Chair, but now I have practical problems currently, and I want that which I'm saying now to be practicalized, because I hear them saying they have a lay, what is it, the LYYP, yes, I have a company. I know that you have told me that the provinces that have benefited are those urban provinces. I'm from a rural province, and I have a set of companies that are about to close, which need people to be retrained or that business be assisted. I have practical issues currently, and I'm also interested, as I've said, in the training of the youth that is unemployed in my constituency. I need assistance so that I can understand that what they say here is not just written on paper. Thank you.
America.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Relating to program number three, there's a sort of a marked reduction in the revised budget as what is envisaged. So if one look at one of the strategic objectives is the training or the creation or the development of aspiring entrepreneurs. Now, in the current financial year, the target was the development of 300 aspiring entrepreneurs. Now, that has, for the new financial year, has increased by 100% to 600 rand. but it is all located within the program number 3, and if one looks at the reduction in the allocation for program number 3, are we able to achieve that objective by the end of the 2016 financial year? Question.
The training layoff scheme and the training of the unemployed and the investment in social responsible investment, they are actually happening, and I will ask the honorable member to give me the information to contact the companies who are about to close down and also those programs so that we can communicate with them. It's happening. The minister has launched the schemes, and members of the board have gone to these institutions, and they see people training. Some, as we speak, are employed, and they have skills that they have achieved. The 300, yeah, we have increased the number by 100%. It's 600 now. Now we. Based on what has happened, we have decided to train our people in-house who can do this training so that it can be less expensive, because previously we were working with other government institutions, so we have developed a skill in-house, and we will be able to achieve that 600 number. Thank you.
Just to clarify on the training layoff scheme on how it is accessed. The company in distress, together with the employee reps, they agree on the status of the company to say yes, it is in distress and we are about to retrench. Then they approach the CCMA office to then try and get an agreement between the two on, let us have a signed agreement that will say, yes, during this period, you will not be retrenched, you will be training, you will be in training. And as soon as that agreement is signed by the employee reps together with the company, then that company then qualifies to be assisted in terms of the training layoff.
My question was busy being asked and now sort of being interrupted by four other. Can we get the last part of the answer before we move on to another question?
No, you will answer Honorable Ollis, because I asked a question before you went for another question, so I didn't want people to go back. Okay, answer that question. Come back.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
You see, before I just tell me, Ms. Mkondo, this social responsibility fund, where does it come from? There is 1.2 billion that the lady has referred to. Please tell me how this 1.2 billion has been budgeted, and you're in that budget, your annual targets into using that 1.2, and at what stage then do you say it's not working, then you can take it to other programs? But I want, don't answer it now, come back to that, because I want the lady to answer, finish answering the questions. The question that was asking of Honorable Ollis. But I would want to get more clarity on the funds that are not used are taken to the other program and then to be used somewhere. So I think I need more on that. But continue that question that you're going to ask. Answer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Honorable Member Ollis, currently as at the end of February, the overfunded balance is 218 million rand. What happens is, as Mr. Tiruya has indicated, is that the fund will pay a benefit. Subsequent to that benefit being paid, the UIF will receive information to indicate that this person has already started working and this person has also planned in the same period. However, we do not always collect the money, or we aren't always able to collect the money, because what we do is we make a provision for write-offs in terms of overpayments, in terms of running tests through our financial data set. Is this person older than a certain age? Is this person currently working, et cetera, et cetera? And then we do provisional write-offs, and then also we might, as I've indicated, we make a provision for most of it, because if the person has been unemployed for an total of months, et cetera, et cetera. So the UIF do have rules that we make provision for not collecting some of this money. But currently, as of the end of February, it's 218 million rand. Then in terms of the fund's investment portfolio, to add to what the Commissioner has said, as at the end of February, the total government and public corporate bonds of the total investment fund amounted to 73.3 billion rand. Then that is the non-current portion of the investment portfolio. Then in terms of the current assets, as at the 20th of February 2015, we had promissory notes of 1.3 billion rand, NCDs of 409 million rand, bills out for training of 390 million rand, and then total fixed deposits of 7.6 billion rand, and then FRIs in terms of the equity property listed in the Agri Fund with the PIC, which is 5.03 billion rand. And then as Mr. Sirwe has also indicated, the equities as of the 28th of February amounted to 22.7 billion rand. So we do have an investment portfolio that is stretched across all the different investment asset classes. And then also to add, currently as of the end of February, the UIF had cash and cash equivalents to the amount of 1.2 billion. Thank you, Chair.
I'm sure it would be follow-up questions, members, to the questions asked. Honorable Ollis, Honorable Muteka.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm still concerned about domestic workers. I have had a domestic worker and I've paid UIF, and I haven't always calculated the amount correct, but I'm never really sure, because I never get a feedback email or a letter or a receipt or anything to say, thank you, we've got the money, or it's correct, or no, we've got a query, you didn't pay the right amount. Now, I'm just one South African, and there's, I don't know how many employees of domestic workers, 800,000. I know it costs money to send posts and other forms of communication, but Chairperson, I would like us to request Mr. Sirwe to discuss with his department a plan on communicating with employers of domestic workers properly, because some domestic workers employers get it wrong. They make mistakes. I make mistakes. I'm sure I've paid the wrong amount 1 year, but I don't know, because you just pay this money and then you never hear again from the fund. And I think we should find a better way of saying to employers, thank you, just one sentence, or sorry sir or ma'am, your number is wrong, you need to fix it. Or because otherwise domestic workers get to the point where they need to claim, and then there's a problem and it's too late. You can't fix it, it's too late. Please can we have a program from the department at the next time we have a briefing from the fund. What can you do better to communicate with employers of domestic workers? Because these are vulnerable people who need to claim, and it's too late to find out afterwards that the employer didn't do the right thing. And we would, the three of us were chatting now quietly. The three of us, at least, would like to invite you to come and do a public meeting in our three constituencies. And I'm sure the other members of the other parties would do the same. I'm Alexandra and Samson in Johannesburg. My colleague here is Cape Town Central and Sea Point. And my colleague over there, America, is a Western Cape rural constituency. And we're inviting you. If you tell us you're available to come, we will hire a hall and you can come and do a presentation to tell employers what their responsibilities are. And we will push, you know, to help domestic workers to get their benefits. Because, you know, the system is there, but it's a question of getting to all the people. And I'm sure other members of other parties would welcome that sort of thing. If you liaise with us, we'll help to get the word out. People who are not registering properly, domestic workers need these benefits, and you are required to do something. And we'll just find help, you know. I think we must all put in effort, including the fund itself, to communicate with employers and employees about the responsibilities and the benefits more. Because as my colleague said, not enough people are properly registered, and not enough workers are able to draw those benefits because something goes wrong in the process. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honourable colleagues, I'm saying it's more employers who are not doing right, because from what I have said, it's going to answer, you still have to answer that question, and I just want to understand it further. That most of those workers, whether you have registered them or not registered, they know the Department of Labor. Immediately you don't pay them, they go after you. Those that have not been followed by the Department of Labor after having, fired domestic workers, they are lucky, I don't know how they survive. But I heard that if you have registered a domestic worker and then there's a fault somewhere, immediately when they go to report, department is paying, and then they follow you after that. So maybe clarify as further to that question as Honorable Ollis has put it. Because I think the problem of registering, it can be a responsibility of a worker. People who should be harassed and be taken into task is the employers, because it's them who have to do it. Very few of these domestic workers who does not know the Department of Labor when you don't pay them. In most cases, they run after you. So, but explain us and assist us further.
Yeah, so you correct that once there is a registration of a domestic worker, and there's a declaration, which is a form that we get from the employer. Where irrespective of a payment or not, we do pay, and we will follow the employer. You're correct, Chairperson. The issue of communication with employers, we also will welcome to be invited to be able to do that. That will assist us. But we also have a system. The e-filing system, Chairperson, is exactly what we want people to use, because if Honorable always uses that system, it will give the feedback. You know, but I agree that many people are not using it, and maybe we will come and demonstrate it. Because when we realize that it is cumbersome to write letters, so sometimes we write a letter, it's a return to sender, and then we're actually wasting a lot of money by sending letters, and people have changed the addresses. So this system is the most efficient system that can be utilized. So on the social responsible...
Okay, Honorable Bahrain.
Thank you, Madam Chair, because I'm not covered. I'll tell you why. When people do go in and ask, and then they're told, no, your employer hasn't paid, we're not paying you out. That's actually what's happening, not what should be happening, what you're telling us. If we could have an address from someone that we could write to, I have a list of those people, and I could send those complaints through directly to a person. That would help me, because I think I've got a list of 15 of them. I would like to write to someone and tell them. And then also, you didn't answer my initial question about criminal litigation, about taking criminal action against directors of companies. But I'd like to see one, because I think that will wake up the business community. You get one director, a managing director of a company, and say, you've deducted UIF for your staff, for 700 staff, you haven't paid it over, you're a criminal, we're going to prosecute you. Has there ever been one? And then let's advertise that. Thank you, Madam Chair. I apologize.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Bahrain. But this issue was raised last time. I'm sure those workers, you are talking about workers who have gone to the Department of Labor, who have proof that they've gone, and the people who go there, and I'm sure the people that you are talking to, are people who will not leave that Department of Labor without knowing who have I spoken to, because if it's general, no one is going to own that. General, that the Department of Labor is not paying. We need to know exactly. So when these complainants come to you, they must give you every detail. Who has not paid? So who did you send to tell you? Honorable Bahrain has a pile of complaints in different entities of Department of Labor, and whenever we need to do, he registers these complaints. However, if a case that you come across that is from any of the members that comes directly to you about complaints, that case has not been with the Department of Labor. There is no proof. It's a general. Then I think it must go back. Because I think some people, when they look at those dues, they don't want to stand in those dues. I'm not saying this is the case. So we must then do that. Don't just deal with the case. You have to. Because it will mean then that some people, it will be the elite ones, will go directly to the, they fly to the Department of Labor, and then the others have to go through that too. So that's what you must establish before you deal with the case.
I need an address.
Sure.
We will actually give the address, and but we can also take the complaints. We have a section in our offices which deals with complaints. It's but we'll give you details. But as the chairperson has indicated, we need to establish that the people have been to the labor center. Can I answer other questions? Mr. Bahrain, in terms of the criminal prosecution, I think the Department of Labor's inspectors, from time to time, they do issue a compliance order where the measures are not yet punitive, where you give an employer a certain period of time to comply, and if they don't comply by that particular time, there is also a final reminder. But from the UIF point of view, we have not yet had a case where we prosecute employers criminally. Not yet, but it's something that we'll look into. terms of your question of social responsible investment, the total amount of money which was allocated was 2.4 billion. 1.2 came from the UI, the other 1.2 came from the Department of Higher Education and Training, which is NSF. I think at that time we anticipated huge layoff of employees because we saw the economies of the first world countries like America having a lot of problems. But that in South Africa, and unfortunately, it did not happen. There were some job losses, but the situation did not continue because I think at that point in time it was indicated that South Africa has a very good financial system. But from our side, we allocated such a huge amount of money anticipating the worst. But when we realized that this money is not being taken up by employers, we were, for instance, 1.2, I think in the first year we had around 20, the other year it was not taken up that well. But I need to indicate that then government decided to say, no, we're not going to stop the scheme. So the people who qualify is not only those who are affected by economic meltdown, but companies who are in distress. So the requirements were actually relaxed to include any other company not affected by economic meltdown. But still, we also realized that the money was not taken up. And then we decided to say, let us spread it over many years, not 1 billion in 1 year. So we spread it over 3 years. We said it's going to be 400 per annum. But we then assisted Productivity South Africa because then they had some turnaround solutions that they wanted to do. And we saw their program as consistent with job preservation. And then we actually said, then we will assist also Productivity South Africa out of the 1.2 billion. I think we have assisted them over a period of 3 years, and we believe that they've done a lot of good work in that regard. But we also said there are some employees who have been retrenched already. Now, we came with the training of the unemployed program, where we said from the same amount of money, then we are going to use it to train those who have already lost their work. But then the board said and thought about this thing, and they said, what about farm workers, those who are working in the farm? Because in the farming community, people are they work in the cycle. People work for 6 months, the other 6 months they're actually not working. Then we said we also want to allocate this money to that process where somebody is a farm worker for 6 months. If they're not working, there's no income. Then we can train them. The Minister of Labour has started this program already in the Free State when he was doing Mbizo's founding, that there are young people who were working in farms and they were put into training. We're also looking into the Western Cape. I think there's an area called Tijorens where on Saturday we're going to be in discussion into how we need this social responsible funding to help the workers in the farming community. So that is how we decided to move away from only the training layoff scheme, but look at other programs. Because if we are going to only limit ourselves to those retrenchments, then we'll have large amount of money not being utilized.
The process of assisting these distressed companies up to after what is that process? I think it has been outlined by the gentleman. But what I don't get is that after you have trained the workers, what then? Because for me, if the workers are benefiting, it means that you are assisting companies that are about to retrench. How exactly are you assisting them in terms of not losing the jobs? How do they benefit after training? What is going on?
Thank you, Chair. In terms of the training layoff scheme, like Mr. Kumaloi has indicated, there must be an agreement. And the agreement is to the effect that the employer will never retrench. So when the employees have received this training, after 6 months, they continue to work in that company. So the assurance that we under exceptional circumstances, do you find the company saying, despite the intervention, we need to close shop? But in most cases, we have example like a company in Brazil that is Parsec, which was in the automotive industry. We assisted them, and they actually continue to employ these workers, but they also created other jobs, and they realized that this scheme is not only to preserve jobs, avoid retrenchment, but in some cases you also get a company being resuscitated to an extent that it's now vibrant and actually employ other workers. I think other beneficiaries are like your BMW, the biggest companies who are still up and running as we speak because of this intervention. So there's one of the conditions is that there should be no retrenchment after this training has taken place. So the workers will continue to work in that particular company after training.
Are any further clarities needed from members?
Yes, sir.
I heard from the presentation, Mr. Mkondo, you said it is sometimes difficult when coming to the payment of the foreign workers. But my question is, how is it difficult to pay if you have, there was no difficulty in collection? I mean, people are contributing and then you accept the money. But when time of payment comes, it is difficult. I think the issue of IDs and all other stuff, they are also required during registration before the subscriptions and all. And they also said some of the financial records are not included here. I mean the incomes, like the penalties and other things. So they are not included in these financial records. So does it mean we are now looking at incomplete financial records? And the final question, follow-up question will be on the issue of these distressed companies. After helping them, who's responsible for the money used? Is it going to them as a loan, or is it just a free service, or the employees have to now pay back all that? I just want to understand that. Thank you very much.
For the record, I'm Mr. Sirua.
Sorry, my sincere apologies.
Thank you, Chair. So the registration, the challenge we have is that when the registration is done by the employer, and then they do the registration in bulk, and they continuously give us a declaration as the employer. Now, what I just indicated is that the document that we use to pay is the employee payment, because they don't have the ID. So some of them do not have this particular payment that we use to pay. So that is the only limit. But if people have the payment, we use that payment to make a payment. But there are instances where people don't have that document. And I think, Chair, because there are instances where they say some migrants are not documented. And I think that is the challenge that you have. In terms of the penalties, we did not do a breakdown. So you'll never, if you look at our slide there, under revenue, we actually have contribution, and we also have other income. So it is, the records are complete, but just that we did not do a breakdown. And the companies that are in distress, honorable member, it's a grant that we give them. They don't pay the money back.
There is no hand that I see from members. It means that we have come to the end of our discussions with UIF, and thank you very much. And your presentations are always, as it has been said by another member, clear. And we understand, I think, clarity that we've asked were clear with the answers. And thank you so much. And sorry for my apologies. You know, we used to say when we were growing, it was called the racist, that all white people are the same, and all black people, they are white, say they're all the same. So it's like all the dull. You know, people are the same. So I'm sorry, my sincere apologies. You are done. And then 3 minutes, because I can see some people are going to fall. Someone is really feeling so hot in this room. So that 3 minutes break, and then the productivity essay can get ready. Thank you.
Thank you.